I'm Kay Bess, and this is The Beehive. Women in voiceover, the voices of the fairer sex that keep the wheels of commerce and creativity moving in this country. Voices you hear every day, but names you likely don't know until now. Hello, everybody. My guest today in the Beehive is the one and only Larissa Gallagher. Welcome to the Beehive.
Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Well, I want to tell you a little bit about Larissa first before we get started. Larissa plays the character of Laguna Blue in Mattel's Monster High, which you can find on DVD, and also as a web series on YouTube. Video gamers will likely have heard her in the online video game Elsword, and also in the animated web series Stan Lee's Cosmic Crusaders. She also plays the role of Julia in the award-winning video game Firewatch. And she also, I know, has some more games coming up, but we are bound by non-disclosure. So we'll talk about that another time. But anyway, I'm very happy to have you here. So we've known each other for just a couple of years, but fast friends.
I know. I feel like, some people you meet and you just click to straight away. And yeah. That's what it felt like with you. It was lovely.
I agree. Tell me how you first got into voiceover.
How long you got?
About 45 minutes.
Excellent. All right. So let's take up 40 of those minutes. Okay. No, long story as short as I can make it. I actually started out as a dancer, as like a ballet dancer. And then I got to a certain point in life where I decided that food was more important than starving myself to fit into a leotard. But still loved the stage, and so went on to doing musical theatre and studying theatre, etc. And so I would say my very first voiceover job that I didn't even really recognise was probably actually when I was around 22 or something, where I played a singing Christmas tree. So I was at the, in the department store, sitting in a separate room and kind of talking to kids and singing.
Were you singing Christmas carols?
Singing Christmas carols with them. But majority of the time it was really hanging out with teenage kids who had been forced to come into the city with their parents, we used to just kind of sit and chat. So one could say I've been doing it kind of since then.
Yeah, for a long time.
Yeah. And plus I'd done speech and drama classes and stuff for a long time. But officially, you know, I did a smattering of work in Australia as well before I really realised I could do that. But I was doing, you know, voice matching character voices for, you know, things like Tiny Robots and Bob the Builder and and Thomas the Tank Engine and things like that. But again,
I love Bob the Builder.
It was good. It was fun. So didn't really intend for that to be, like, didn't know it was voiceover. It was just kind of something that I was doing that was part of my theatre and acting and musical theatre. Right. And then I moved to the US and I had made a voiceover demo, but I never did anything with it. And so I moved to the US, not for the purpose of acting, but to meet or to be with my now husband. And we had done some voiceover stuff for invitations for parties and things. And then I didn't have my green card yet. I wasn't allowed to work. I had nothing to do. And then he went for a run and heard my voiceover demo because he'd taken my iPod with him.
Oh, that's funny.
Just randomly, and then came home and was like, you need to go and do this. And that was about 6 years ago.
Okay.
So I would say I kind of went headfirst into voiceover as a career. Or maybe like, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, but it probably, like, everything kind of started turning around.
Gel,
it became more of a full-time career as opposed to, well, let's see how this works, about 6 years ago.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
What would you say in that short span of time, where voiceover's been your main focus, what would you say was the best job that you've had so far? the most fun, the most enjoyable, for whatever reason.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would say, yeah, a couple of different jobs for different reasons. I would say that the Stan Lee Cosmic Crusaders was probably a very big highlight, even though we only ran a few episodes and, you know, it wasn't broadcast on national television, blah, blah. But for me, I think, A, because the character was American accent, so it was a lead character in an American accent with Stan Lee, who is the god of all superheroes.
Yeah, exactly.
Apologies, DC Comics, you guys are great too. But, you know, so in that world, so that was kind of like an achievement that I never really thought I'd be able to get in such a short amount of time. That was excellent. Another one would be a video game that I've been working on that we're not allowed to talk about. But for various reasons, that was kind of another big jump I felt in my career and have loved every minute of working on it and everything I've been able to do.
Yeah.
So that's been wonderful. And then, yeah, and sometimes it's the other, probably the biggest one is like I've got a really great unsung hero job where I do telephony. So like every single day I have work that comes in that's just your simple, you know, thank you for calling, blah, 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 for reception, press one, or whatever it is. And that's, that's been going for maybe like a year and a half now. And, but, you know, that's kind of like that's my bread and butter day to day.
Sure.
And so even though it's not sexy and exciting, it's what makes me go, I am a working person because this needs to be done every day. Otherwise, you know, so that kind of makes me feel like I get to do a 9-to-5 job in something that I love. And I occasionally also get these bursts of like, you know, the
character work.
And
the more glamorous.
More glamorous,
we would say.
That's right.
And still we don't have to wear makeup, even as glamorous as it might be.
Indeed.
Tell me, do you have an experience that you could talk about that was sort of like, oh, wow, I hope that never happens again. You know, sort of your worst moment.
Yeah. So when my very first day working as Laguna Blue on Monster High, and I knew that I got in the role. I originally auditioned. I had no idea what I was auditioning for or anything like that. And then I got the role and I was taking over the role from the incredibly viciously talented Laura Bailey. And so I kind of was walking in feeling this sense of responsibility to really make this character as good as, if not better, for the fans and everyone who, you know, because people get linked to voice actors and roles and you don't want to ruin that for them. But at the same time, it's like, well, now this is my chance to create, you know, to build on what Laura's done. But the very first day of recording, there was maybe 5 or 6 people on the other side of the glass, as well as people that were dialing in on the phone. Oh. And so it was kind of like, this is my first massive, you know, kind of, this is going to be a role that will last. People already know this role, responsibility. And everyone behind the glass had their own idea of what they wanted. So direction was coming thick and fast and different and do this and try that and blah, blah, blah. And it took everything in me to go, I'm not a bad actor. This is everyone trying to discover who this girl is with me at the helm. And so it was kind of, you know, it was awful and exhilarating all at the same time, because holding on to that, which happens a lot, as you would know, in voiceover, kind of you have this little thing that gets into your head, which is, oh, they're telling me to do something different. That's because what I did was terrible and I need to do it, as opposed to no. They just wanted to have as many options as possible, and how great that I can actually give that to them.
Right.
So, yeah, but for a good 8 hours or 6 hours, I had to quell the voices in my head going, you suck, and listen to the ones going, no, champion, keep going. And then at the end of the day, everyone was like, oh, my God, that was amazing. You know, you're so fantastic. We had such a great day working with you. Can't get. And it's like,
you walk out and your knees buckle.
Yeah, exactly. Right? And I went home and was like, oh, but yes.
Is this how it's going to be?
Forever. So that was kind of that. You know, it was obviously a happy story in the end, but for a good 6 hours, it was just telling myself, don't listen to that voice, because you were here for a reason. You would not be here otherwise listen to that voice and hold on to that and keep discovering and exploring. So that was good.
Excellent story. Well, it's a good one though, because there you are in the moment. You know, we're actually in the moment. It's not like it's not like before you walk in the door. All right, Larissa, you know, you got this. But it's like in the middle of all the direction, and the more people in the room on the other side of the glass, the bigger the recipe for disaster. I mean, that's just, and so it's, I mean, when you said how many people were in the room, I was like, oh, I'm already getting hives just because it's so. It's a horrible feeling. If an agent calls and says, by the way, you know, so-and-so is going to be on the line for your session. And then when you get on the line with them and they're like, and here's so-and-so, the writer, and here's so-and-so, the producer, and here's so-and-so, the director. Oh, and here's so-and-so, the client, you know, from from corporate. And here's somebody from the,
God. Who are all these people? Hi. And then it's like, hi, everyone. Hi, great everyone. To meet you. I'm not stressed at all.
And then you do a take. And then they say, John, how did you feel about that?
Yeah.
You know, Margaret, how did you feel about that? I mean, it's like.
And they're like, yeah, that was great. Yeah, that was great. Was it? That doesn't sound like it was great. That just feels. Yeah. But, and then, you know, the confusion of who, and especially because you've just met all these people as well.
Right.
So it's like, who's talking to me and who's this? And so you just have to, you know, but it was good.
You
it was like,
it was exactly what you did.
Yeah.
Steal yourself.
Keep pushing through, you know, and just, because I mean, I'm sure I could have tanked hideously. But luckily, I think, you know, having had years of experience in the world of theater and having my own disappointments and struggles through that, I think it was one of those, you know, no, this is the time to show.
Yeah.
You're here for a reason.
So every little struggle like that makes the next one just a little less dangerous.
That's right. You know? Yeah. And also that, you know, wow, if I can make it through that, I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know.
What's your dream voiceover job?
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know, because I feel like I've been so lucky to get stuff already. But I would say there's the dream would be I would like to be a lead role or very, you know, at the least recurring character on a network animated series in the style of your Butch Hartman style comedy.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side of that is I've always had a little dream that I've wanted to be kind of like a Josie and the Pussycats or something like that, whereas, you know, you're in a girl band in the animated series, so then you get to sing
on top of that.
In the band,
And then they release an album.
And then they release an album. But you're like the character playing it. And, or Jem or, you know, all of those things. I love
Josie
that.
Josie and the Pussycats. Yeah. Oh, my God.
So if those two worlds came together, I don't know how viable that is, but that would be a dream. But either one of those two, that's kind of
that's great.
Where I would love to be.
Did you go through sort of the experience as an I mean, you're an actor, right? In various areas of that big, large profession that it is. Were you ever a waiter, a bartender? What kind of odd jobs did you do while trying to get your foot in the door to actually working full-time as an actor?
Other than singing Christmas Tree.
Other than the singing Christmas Tree, which counts.
Which does count.
You know,
that's
it
right.
is sort of a... You know, an odd job.
That's right. Well, I've had a few of those kind of things. I have, you know, skipped down the streets dressed in an elf costume, handing out candy.
God, I've been there. Such a great elf.
I tell you, it was the best workout exercise. I think I lost like 10 pounds those 3 weeks. So, silly. I think I'd once dressed up as like the Easter Bunny in a suit and was like, I'm never doing suit work again. But it's probably the main thing was call center work. I did a lot of call center helpline kind of stuff. Not a ton of selling, a little bit of selling for a while.
Yeah.
I worked for a wine company selling wine, so that was good fun because we got a free case of wine every month.
And right on.
As an educational, in quotation marks, because you can't see the hand gestures I'm doing over the microphone. Yeah, so call center work. So I think, again, everything I've kind of done has been I made a concerted effort to make sure that whatever I did in the part-time world at least in some way enhanced what I've been doing all along. Because otherwise, you know, and that was why the waiter thing I just never clicked with, because I kind of was like, well, where is this going to get me
right.
if I do
except
this?
Except to a management management role, in a restaurant.
Yeah, exactly.
Working the night shift.
You know, or maybe I meet someone at a table and slip in my reel, and that's, you know.
So unclassy.
But yeah, so that was the world. But probably Dancing Elf.
Dancing Elf is the best.
In full I think elf costume. Yeah.
So far, no one has said Dancing Elf.
No, good.
That's yours.
Good. Thank you. With my striped socks and my little jingly bell shoes.
Did you sing?
The whole thing.
Doing the elf?
Or occasionally, because occasionally when you'd stand with Santa. Okay. Like I went with Santa.
You really?
Wonderful. Irreverent.
I could just testify that you would really make a fantastic elf.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
All of you who don't know me. It's the elf inside. No, but it was. I mean, that goes to that. You just go, I look like a complete fool, and so embrace it. Yeah. I love it. And so, yes. Yeah.
And you did.
And it wasn't difficult.
If you could name one person who really gave you a leg up in your voiceover career, who might that be?
That's very difficult because I feel like I've had some incredible people, and so I want to name all of them. Which is everyone I've met.
Yeah.
Well, people.
Everyone I've met.
Yeah, everyone I've met.
Every experience I've had.
Because I'm nervous of leaving people out. But you all know who you are. I think who I will mention is a gentleman by the name of Sheldon Smith, who's a DC or was based in DC voice actor, who when I was building my career in DC, I did a ton of non-union work because I was originally kind of starting building up, trying to get the voice, building a resume, etc. And after a couple of years of doing that, I had come across Sheldon, who is kind of had been known, especially in DC, but subsequently I've come to find in a lot of places around the US, as being very, very high up in the industry, both respectfully and career-wise. Uh-huh. And I met him and he was a big champion for me to make a big effort to join the union, for one. And then subsequently he got me in touch with Maurice Tobias when I very first moved over here. And I've had incredible coaches as well. And I didn't work a lot with Maurice, but I felt like that 1-2 punch combination gave me A, the confidence and two, you know, the ability to springboard into Los Angeles. So it was leaving DC, meeting Sheldon, and then moving over and kind of first connecting with Maurice that I think really helped me get to where I am and then everyone else in between. But yes.
What's the most important lesson that a career in the arts has taught you?
I think probably the biggest lesson, I'm terrible. I always want to say two.
I'm going to say two. Just trying to get you to narrow it.
Sure.
From 10 to 2, that's fine.
One is be kind to everyone because you never know, A, what other people are going through, why they're acting the way they are, and or on the flip side of that, who they are and how they could champion you in the future. Mm-hmm. And then lesson two, what I've learned is how much ability I have to control my own career and the decisions I make, which is something that I didn't do when I was doing musical theatre and theatre, but just I kind of left it in the hands of everyone else. And I think one of the things that voiceover has taught me is how important business knowledge is in a career, but also just to claim every, you know, success and every non-success as, you know, as your own, and that you have the ability to change that or you have the ability to input enough in order to be able to change that or at least guide towards where you want to go, which has been a big lesson for me because I used to just think, oh, it's everyone else's fault that I didn't get to where I was.
Right, until things happen to you and you can't do anything about it.
That's right.
So. Yeah. I've found that in talking to people that, and also it's my own experience that, you know, there have been dark moments in my career. And, you know, I say in my career, but they're actually sort of dark moments in my life where I feel like things just have stalled. And I think, what happened? What happened to the career I had, or why did that thing go away? Or why are things not moving? Why are they not? And sometimes it's you know, sometimes it's right after sort of a, you know, the catastrophic loss of a job or something. And it just, when you do something like voiceover and it's something that you love, it can't help but bleed into your sense of yourself. And, you know, that's sort of the cross that actors bear, you know, without trying to sound, you know, like it's the hardest job in the world. I recognize that it's not, but it's very much tied to our sense of ourselves and whether or not we're worthy, you know, as human beings.
Of course,
and so the stories that I've heard tend to be that people switch direction or start a new path after something catastrophic has happened.
Yeah.
You know, and those are the opportunities for reinvention, right? And I think just based on what you're saying, that you take all the crappy stuff along with the good stuff and you have to evaluate them both, you know, and they both can work to your favor.
Exactly.
Catastrophes can work to your favor if you choose to view them as opportunities to learn.
Well, that's right. And then, and if I may add to that, and I know that we've talked about this before, but for, you know, the people that don't know me, which is probably quite a few, but is that my, I mean, if I look back, I could say that my whole voiceover career in some way was spurned out, or my definitely my life in America was spurned out of what was to me a catastrophic event where I basically gave up theater and acting altogether because I had tried for so long. And again, very long story short, but I'd been workshopping a musical for a long time and had even moved cities in Australia to, you know, help with the workshop. And then, you know, the musical took off and it was, you know, got great acclaim. And then a producer came in and said, I want to tour this around Australia. We're going to take it to the UK and everything. And the writer and director and musical director had kind of given me the pat on the shoulder to say, oh, you know, you're in, don't worry about it. You know, yes, we all have to audition again because that's the process, but you've got it, you know, so don't stress. But then I didn't get it. So I was kind of like, well, if I can create a role and that role was written for me and I'm not good enough to play that, according to this person, what am I doing in this industry?
Yeah.
And so I quit theater and I moved back to my parents' house and, you know, and then I met my husband and then moved, well, you know, now husband, moved to the US. But none of, like, being a voice actor or being an actor in the US and in Hollywood was never part of my plan. And even as a little girl, like, I didn't ever have that, oh, I'm going to grow up and be a Hollywood star. You know, it was just kind of like, I love acting. I always want to be on stage or performing, but that wasn't kind of the plan. And yet had that not happened, had I not given up everything, you know, eaten my humble pie, moved back home, spent 6 months living with my parents because I had no money because I was an out-of-work actor, you know, all of this stuff, I wouldn't be sitting in Hollywood doing a podcast with you now. So, you know, it's like even these things which you think are the end of the world, you know, can turn around to be something incredible. Because to go back to that was that I did suddenly have this realization that when I went into voiceover, I was like, I'm never listening to other people in terms of I'm never evaluating my self-worth based on other people's ideas of my ability or self-worth.
Right.
And if I'm confident and know I'm a good actor, focus on all the people who've said, yes, you're good. Yes, I'll give you a role. Yes, I'll hire you for a year. Like I just ignored all those other people and focused my whole decision on this one thing, you know. So that was kind of a really good thing for me to learn, and in life generally as well.
Yeah, that's a great story. When you lose something big, you know, I just watched La La Land.
Oh,
and it was pretty sweet. But I, you know, you can't help but focus on the scene where she's just like, "I'm going home.
Right,
I'm
yeah.
done." You know, and things turn around. You know,
that's right. Sometimes going home is the best thing you can do.
Yeah, to go find, to go remember.
Yeah.
To go remember who you are.
That's true.
It's like, remember.
Remember. And embrace the things that make you joyous or give you joy.
Yeah.
You know, and if that needs to be your family or if that needs to be a friend or if that needs to be a hobby or a career, whatever it is.
Right. You got to find your joy first.
Be joyous in it. If it's hurting you or killing you, and you feel like it's what you're meant to do, then that's fine. Keep pursuing it, but go and fill your life with things that make you happy as well, as incongruous as they may seem, because if you're not happy, you know, I mean, that's a whole.
I think that I think that this is true for voice actors. It's a little more obvious for on-camera actors because, you know, you play a character who has a particular life story and you need on some level to relate to it, to find that same story in yourself so you can be authentic in the role. But to experience life is the point. I mean, I had a writing class for a long time. Jack Grapes teaches a fantastic workshop in writing, whatever kind of writing it is. If you're a poet, if you're a screenwriter, you're a novelist, whatever, all the principles apply. And many people in our Wednesday morning class, we came every quarter. Mm-hmm. So we all got to know each other. And every once in a while, somebody'd be missing from the class. And Jack, we'd say, where's so-and-so? And he'd say, oh, they're out for supplies. And it was this sense of, you don't stop writing. It's not like you stop if you're not in class.
Yeah.
You gotta go live. You have to experience the life that you want to project and to play in characters, even cartoon characters.
Yeah.
You know? And so I just love the whole idea that sometimes when you just can't summon it, you just need to go out for supplies.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to go restore. You got to fill the bag back up, you know, to come in and go, all right, I got my stuff and I'm ready to go.
And go back,
And go back to it. But not that you've given up, but sometimes you just have to replenish. And I love the image,
out for supplies. Out for supplies, just checking out for a moment, I'll be back. And I think that also applies to, you know, which you would understand when you, like, put your heart and soul into getting something and then you find out you didn't get it and someone else did or whatever, or, you know, and even though you don't care in the sense of, you know, oh, screw her, blah, blah, blah. That sort of feeling, but just that, oh, I really wanted that. That would have been so good. And I've learned how to rephrase that into, you know, from woe is me, poor me, you know, this industry sucks, to A, how awesome for her, boo, I didn't get that. Ooh, but what else does that mean that I might get? Because I've had that experience where you don't get that thing you want, but it's because something so much more incredible happened, So it's a really nice that I found that nice rephrase that works and sits with me to be, oh, I didn't get that because
something else
is coming.
Yeah.
It might not be tomorrow. It might not be for 10 years, but
it's coming.
It's coming.
Yeah. Wherever it happens. There's also that great, I don't know what you call it, but it's just an idea to sort of wrap your head around that it takes so many no's before you get to a yes.
Oh, yeah.
And so when you get a no, you go, great, there's one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you sort of like plow through. I'm on my way to yes.
Yeah.
Every no gets me that much closer to a yes.
Yeah.
Which again is a way to reframe rejection.
Exactly.
Which is, you know, we get rejected on most of the things we audition for.
Yeah.
And that's just how it is.
Yeah.
And so you get to reframe it and then it's just all a part of the experience.
That's right.
Which I just find helpful in having all these no's not kind of destroy you.
Exactly. Yeah. And it happens because, you know, I feel like, you know, having met you and you've been in this industry for a lot longer and in this, you know, LA, Hollywood, this whole world longer than I have. And that's what I find incredibly inspiring about you and having met you is that even the people who are the most successful are still getting no's, still getting friends, getting the jobs they want.
Yes.
But, and you kind of go, oh, yeah, that's right. It's not, you know, just because you don't hear, you know, how many no's George Clooney is getting, you just assume everything is. But I'm sure there's stuff that, you know, different people have got their heart set on, but they're just not going around advertising it.
Right.
So, but that's it. You know, you kind of go, oh, well, Kay's been working forever and she must be getting heaps of stuff and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, Kay's like, no, Clarissa,
let me count the no's.
But at the same time, you know, and then there's ups and downs and ebbs and flows and it is what it's meant to be and work that the best for yourself. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, we are coming to the end, believe it or not. I know. But I have a little questionnaire for you, which comes from the Actors Studio.
Oh, interesting.
Which, as I have said before...
Mate. No, I don't know.
What?
I'd randomly answer. Don't they do like, what's the first word that comes into your head?
Right, me.
Me.
Yeah.
I don't know why it's me. Anyway. Sorry, okay.
No, that's okay. As I've said before, this comes from James Lipton in the Actor's Studio. And I've always, I always watched that show and thought, who's going to ask a voice actor this question?
Oh, yay.
Those questions. And it's like, I'm going to do it. Yes. So here I am. I think I've said that on every podcast now. So I think it's going to become my signature line.
Okay.
I'm going to ask the questions.
Please.
Yes. Okay. So
Lipton and Vess. Yes.
What is your favorite word?
Me. No. My favorite word to say at the moment is smear.
Smear.
So in my accent,
smear, yes.
smear is kind of
no, I like
not
the way
as fun.
You say it.
Smear. But my favorite word is currently compassion.
What's your least favorite word?
Exclusion.
What turned you on?
Excuse me.
It could be, I asked my daughter this yeah. list of questions when she asked me. She goes, I want to be on your podcast. So
fun.
It was great. So I didn't say what turned you on to my daughter.
Good
I said, what makes you happy?
What makes you happy?
So yeah. So you
same thing. I would say, honestly, what turns me on is charismatic people.
What turns you off?
Pettiness.
What sound or noise do you love?
Ocean waves crashing on the shore, 100%.
What sound or noise do you hate?
No. No, someone saying no.
Someone saying no is a terrible sound.
Sound for me.
What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Psychology or therapy, I think so.
What profession would you absolutely not want to do?
I would never. I think the worst profession in the world is those people who have to stand on the side of the road in an outfit.
Spinners.
Spinners. It's not really a profession. Is it a profession?
Yes.
I don't know. But that.
It is a profession.
Spinning the signs and dancing on this, doing that, because I feel like.
Didn't you sort of do that as an elf?
But the difference.
How dare you?
I was an elf.
Not spinning a sign.
No, but. Being an elf, I got to talk to people.
Oh, that's good.
And I got to make people happy and give them candy. And, I moved.
Yes.
Like, I progressed, but,
moved about.
And whereas those people are just standing in one spot. They're not allowed to listen to music. They're not allowed to talk to anyone. There's pollution everywhere.
And they're spinning a sign.
And I just feel like.
I want those people to be
paid a lot of money. I don't think they are.
I hope the hourly rate is pretty good, but how do we know?
Anyway, never.
If heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say to you when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I don't know if this is it, but the first thing that came into my head was, you did good.
Larissa Gallagher, thank you so much for joining me in the Hive.
Thank you, Capus. I've had a lovely time. Thanks, everyone.
Oh, before we leave.
Please.
A bonus.
Monk's,
I'm sorry.
What is it? Monk's reward.
Yes. Where can people find you?
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, sorry.
That's all right.
I was so overcome by your beauty that I forgot to say that. I'm sorry. So,
that's
yes.
All right. Find me, Facebook, which I'm just Larissa Gallagher, I think, but spelled Gallagher, G-H-E-R. I don't go on Facebook a lot, though. So
Twitter.
More than likely Twitter and Instagram, which are both at Larissa La, LarissaLa.
Okay. So like Larissa Los Angeles.
Yes. Although technically it was originally my nickname that people used to call me La. And then I couldn't
Larissa
be
La.
At Larissa or at Larissa Gallagher. So I did Larissa La and then I moved to LA. And so then it became Larissa LA.
Yeah. That's serendipitous.
Yeah. So it worked out well. But yes, please find me. Instagram, Twitter are your best bets.
Fantastic. Mwah. Thanks for joining me today in the Beehive. For podcast notes, pictures, and more information on my guests, visit the podcast website, thebeehivepodcast.com. Find me at my website, kbess.com. Follow me on Twitter at kbess.
and subscribe to my channel on YouTube. If you've a mind to, please post a review of the podcast on iTunes. Kind words are like honey, sweet to the soul and good for the bones. Come back for more Women in VoiceOver next time in the Beehive.